inspiration, success stories, expert advice, strategies, new ideas, and amazing conversations. Everything you need to become a great speaker. This is Oscar Santolaya, and welcome to Time to Shine. Hello and welcome. Today we'll dive into the world of a rock band and how that relates to sales presentation and especially sales demos. For that, we have a special guest who is Paul Logg. He hails from near Glasgow in Scotland and boasts a 25-year career as a professional bass guitarist in a heavy rock band alongside a career in IT. He spent 21 years at IBM, with half of that dedicated to travel and expense management software. Paul moved to Embers 5 years ago and rose from the first solution consultant in the UK to leading the international team as Director of Solutions Consulting. He is also known as the pre-sales rock star. Hello, Paul.
Hi there, Oscar. What an intro.
Nice having you here, Paul. I've been following what you have been doing and lately writing very interesting things in LinkedIn. At least that's where I found your writings. And I think we have a lot of interesting things to talk about this world of your rock band and especially about sales presentation, sales demos. So please start telling us your journey as both as rock musician and sales professional and how this happens, also how intertwined.
Yeah, okay. This is a good test of my memory. So I'm going to go back probably just short of 30 years ago. So my first record deal was signed in, I think it was 1995. So I would be approximately 19 years old. I've let the finance professionals work out my age from that. And I had a job in a bank at the time, but my real goal in life was to be a professional musician. As you announced in the intro, I was a bass guitarist in a Glasgow-based heavy rock band. So we were like Aerosmith, Bon Jovi, Van Halen, very radio-friendly rock, still hanging on to the 1980s music. And around that time, I actually met my wife, and my wife's critical to the story because my father, who was an executive at IBM, came to me and said, "Son, you will never support a wife working on your poor wages from your bank job. You'll need to get a real career." And that made me start looking elsewhere. And my father spoke about some jobs coming up in IBM. He said, "I cannot get you a job, but I can certainly get you an application form. The rest is up to you." So my background, I studied at college, actually IT anyway. So that was always my background. I was pretty good with computers. I knew my way around the basics of IT. And in fact, part of my course at college was really the skill set of a business analyst. So that's where I really wanted to proceed to in IBM. And as you said, I was 21 years there. When I started, I was doing a job which we call the central order desk. And essentially it was a job where you processed SAP orders for high street retailers. So at the time, IBM still made actual PCs, laptops, servers inside of the building that I worked at. And I managed a couple of accounts for some of the biggest retailers. And I was still trying to pursue, as we call, a weekend warrior. I was, you know, 9-to-5 IT guy during the week. And then come the weekend, the band was playing shows in Glasgow, Aberdeen, England, etc., trying to really reach stardom. And we were recording our first record for our new record company. So meeting my wife was that real catalyst to move into an IT career. And pretty soon after that, so we got married in 1999. And many years later, after several different jobs within IBM, you just seem to move around IBM and get experiences in all facets of the company. My band had kind of fallen to the wayside, but I always continued to write songs. I was the main songwriter. And I started to get some success with artists coming to me and asking me to write songs. And I got a couple of minor hits within Europe, particularly in the German music scene. And I really started to get quite friendly with a German record producer. And at this time, this would be about 2006, I moved to a new team within IBM, which was the travel team, and this was going to form the rest of, you know, the last 20 years of my career almost. And at the same time, I formed a brand new band, which was going to be the biggest musical success I ever had. They both came at the exact same time. And to further complicate the matter, I became a father 1 year later as well. So I've got a beautiful daughter, Emma, who's now 17 years old, driving a car, which I cannot believe. And my debut album, so I formed a band called Eden's Curse. And we were, again, a very heavy rock band. I wrote all of the songs. In actual fact, what we did was we recorded the entire album digitally without ever meeting each other. Not once did we meet each other during the recording process. So we were almost like an internet e-band. And we got signed immediately within Europe to quite a large record label. And we had lots of interest from other record companies to ask us to go and sign for them. So it was quite a humbling experience. And at the same time, in IBM, I'm now out meeting customers, I'm taking requirements, I'm being pre-sales, even though I didn't know it at the time. I was a sales guy, I was implementation in that travel team. We were selling our Java-based applet to companies like Bosch, Coca-Cola, etc. These were some of the clients I was working with. Eli Lilly, the large pharma company, I did a global implementation for those guys, which lasted 5 years. It was 54 countries traveling all around the world while still trying to maintain this desire to be a musician, which I admit in 2007 was slowly waning because I was a dad. I was having a career that was successful. But we did record 5 studio albums. We sold over 50,000 albums. We toured all over the world, played in America. We've toured all over Europe. We supported some massive, massive bands. And we've even done like a live album, which was things that I grew up listening to, bands like Whitesnake and Iron Maiden, and holding their double live album. We did a double live album in my hometown of Glasgow, which was amazing. We did a DVD. We did even a best of album, which I can't believe. And then I moved to Inverse and I got a job offer to move to Inverse to be the first solutions consultant. And by this time, my band had been going for 15 years, probably, but hadn't. We had done extremely well. I have done more in music than many thousands, millions more musicians, and I'm extremely grateful for it. But I realized that I wasn't yet in the big time, and it could never be a career that could sustain the family and pay the mortgage, pay the bills. And I realized that my skill set truly was in IT and pre-sales. And that was me officially moving in, dedicated solely to doing pre-sales, becoming the first, as you said, the first solutions consultant, not just in the United Kingdom, but in the whole of Europe. I was the first Scottish employee for Inverse as well, which I'm very proud of as well. And that team is now growing to 5 with an SC in Germany. I've got one in Italy. I've got one in Spain. I'm still an IC in the UK, but I'm just in the final stages of hiring my second solutions consultant for the United Kingdom. And when I moved Oscar to Inverse, the one thing that really, it made me come to a decision with my music. I thought, I've taken it as far as I can. And many people were upset with me. My fan base was disgusted with me. How could you do this to us? When I toured with the band, I met people who had tattooed my band's name on their arm. That, you know, things that just blew your mind. That the room that you and I are, that I'm sitting in talking to you, I wrote all of the songs here on an acoustic guitar, which you can probably see over my shoulder. All of the songs over 5 albums were written there, and to meet someone that's tattooed your band's name on their body is beyond words. But it made me reach that point in my life that I said, if I'm moving to Inverse and they want me to be this all-important role within their organisation, I need to give this job 100% focus. And I knew I could not do that because the band was so important to me. It was so important to thousands of people who bought our albums and adored the group. It was important to a record company, and it was a nice time for me just to say, okay, that's the stake in the ground. We've had a great shot, and the rest, they say, is history. I've never looked back I look back in pride. I never look back in regret because I had an unbelievable time trying to do both. And the biggest person I need to thank is my wife. She didn't kill me during the process of this. She's always supported me in all endeavours, whether it be work or whether it be music. And in actual fact, a cool story is, if you remember what I said, I met my wife when I was still in my very first band. So she witnessed the birth of the group that was successful. And that was cool. That's why she stood by and said, go and follow your dreams and see if you can make it work. So that was a long answer, but that's my journey.
Yeah, well, you definitely, you create a really big band, say. Well, not a big band as we know, but like a really big career, you know, not just a small couple of years. No, it really, you really went very far to have fans that tattoo your band on the body. It's amazing. So one question I would like to ask you, because I have not had a chance to talk with people who have been in rock bands playing for so many years like you. I've been talking with many speakers, performers, comedians, actors, etc. But what are the skills, what are the difference that a rock musician needs to master when they are performing that other type of performers, the ones I mentioned, don't necessarily have, or all the performers have something in common?
Yeah, that is a really good question, and it's something that I've racked my brains around to come up with something unique. And I don't think there is anything unique, Oscar, in my opinion, because I think all of these people, I look at them all as artists. So, you know, classical musicians, actors, comedians, dancers, whatever, they're all performers, they're all creators, and they all share commonalities in the fact that they hone their craft. So things like, if you look at Lionel Messi as a football player, for example, and I know that you've got a South American background, so I hope I don't offend you there, but natural ability, absolutely natural ability. But Barcelona still had to harness that natural ability and put it into a team. You know, you can't have a guy that's going to run off and beat 11 players. So everyone, irrespective, I'm not a natural musician, I'll be honest with that. I'm more of and I always looked at myself as a rounded musician because I wrote songs, played guitar, played bass, can play a little drums as well. But I have people in my band who are virtuosic players where they are incredible musicians. They have spent thousands and thousands of hours in their bedroom practicing, whether it be guitar, whether it be vocals. And that I think is the commonality that all of the different kind of performers that you've mentioned, they've all spent hours that people don't see. Even I read something recently about Lady Gaga, and kids at her school used to bully her, but her father would make her carry this large electric keyboard and go up 5 flights of stairs to her piano teacher every weekend. And that's the things that you don't see in the background that, you know, people who are now fronting large bands have spent hours learning this craft. You know, there's things like presence that come on stage, whether it be an actor, whether it be a musician, a dancer that comes later on through experience. There's improvisation. These are all things, when you start to think about it, especially as a speaker, that we don't really probably note that we actually involve in our public performances, whether it be if I'm demoing a piece of software, I have to improvise all of the time. I absolutely have to hone my craft. I do have to have a presence to stand up and try and convince a boardroom full of executives that my solution is worth spending sometimes thousands or even millions of pounds on. We can support different types of genres as well. So an actor can work, you know, not just in a comedy, you can do a serious drama as well. Musicians are the same. You can play jazz, heavy metal, you name it. We can all write our own content, whether it be a demo script or a song or a play. The one thing that I did think about was bad boy attitude. I think when I look at rock musicians, and I think time has moved on from that. You know, there's not the excesses of the 80s. The band that I think of is either somebody like Guns N' Roses or Motley Crue, who were just bad guys at the end of the day. But then you look into the acting world, you had Marlon Brando, you've got Russell Crowe. There's definite examples throughout that. So that's maybe one thing that us IT professionals don't fall into, I would think, in the professional capacity. We've always got to be, you know, our optimum best, and we've got to be dressed well. We've got to be, you know, absolutely professional. Being an IBM guy, that was something IBM taught you from the very, very early days. When I joined, it was all men in white collars with black ties. And, you know, it looked like NASA back then. And now coming out, it's a very diverse cultural where everyone's allowed to bring them full, their full selves to work, which is one of the things I love about Emburse. And I'm going to give our Chief People Officer, Danielle Tabor, a name check, because Danielle and her team are phenomenal at making sure that we have the best culture within our company and that we can all be who they are. In fact, when I got interviewed, I remember talking to someone, a close friend, who said, make sure you hide your guitars on the video. Emburse need to know that you're serious about working there. And I didn't do a very good job of it. And I was meeting the CRO of Emburse, and he said, oh, is that a guitar? And he panned around, and his entire wall was covered in guitars. And it taught me a very valuable lesson that that connection was maybe pivotal in me getting the job as well. And I really should always bring myself to work. So there we go. I don't think there's anything unique, but we share a lot in common.
As is true, as you say, that all these performers who really stood up, standing out today, have this thing that we don't see, that hours and hours honing their skills, mastering their skills. It's something we don't see. Often we see this, as you said, the bad guys, no? You see the this outer part. Well, it's super interesting what you're telling me, of course. So going now to see the analogies between the rock bands and now presenting and selling, what do presenters can learn from rock musician? If you can get a couple of tips on that.
Yeah, and I think it does follow nicely into some of the things I touched on. So if you think behind the denim jacket, the leather coat, the sunglasses, and all of the facade of what they look like is that kind of hard work, determination, grit. So the people who really succeed and get to the top of, whether it's performance or in our industry or public speaking, are the ones that are going to spend hours doing things like practice. You know, as a musician, when even though that I had five albums, I had probably played songs that I wrote maybe 3,000 times, we still practiced those songs because you want to make sure that when you come to do that performance, you know what you're going to perform. It's absolutely critical as well. And it becomes muscle memory after a while, so that you can engage with the audience. You can have eye contact with the audience, which is vital within sales or public performance or speaking, just as it is on stage. In fact, it's one of the coolest things on stage is to be in the middle of playing a song and catch eye with someone in the audience who's singing your song back at you that you wrote. That for me is everything. That's unbelievable. So that's a demo that I would do, for example, is quite similar. You can get instantaneous feedback. You know, when you talk about something or a feature of your software that's resonating with the audience, you can see it written on their face. You can see the averse as well, if it's not going down well. And that comes back to that improvisation. But you can only improvise when you're well rehearsed. Yes. I talked about the natural ability of Messi and being able to channel it in the right direction. That comes with practice and what we call experience. I would not stand in front of you today and tell you that every demo I've ever done has been absolutely perfect. Not at all. I have to have a bad demo to know what a good demo looks like. And that's taken 5 years at Emburse for me to do that. I'm happy to tell you this here, but one of my first demos I did for a huge global brand, everyone would know the name, but I'll not say it through effect, was within my first 6 months at Emburse. And I was really under pressure to do this. There was so much to show. After the demo, I sat with the sales guy, who was quite a senior guy, and said, okay, give me some feedback. And he said, that's beep and beep. He swore at me and he was saying it was absolutely awful. And I felt really, really bad and took lessons on what I could do better. So you really do have to work at your craft, no different to performance as well. But I do want to touch on one thing, especially. You're going to ask me, I think, later on about a book that I would recommend. And I'm going to talk about one. In fact, I'm going to actually tell it now. It's vital to the story here. The book I'm going to talk about is The Six Habits of a Successful Sales Engineer by Chris White. The Six Habits of a Highly Effective Sales Engineer by Chris White. And Chris breaks it down into six different habits. Mm-hmm. Partner, probe, prepare, practice, perform, and perfect. And those last four for me are absolutely critical as a performer and even as a public speaker. You need to do your preparation. You need to practice what you're going to talk about. You need to go out there and perform. And what I talked about is getting feedback. Feedback's critical, you know, finding out what the audience thought, maybe watching a video back yourself. How many times did I say, how does that sound to the audience? And what can I do better next time? So I think that's what, you know, presenters can learn from rock musicians as well.
Mm. Yeah, indeed. Again, when I hear the number, thousands of times you told you personally have played some of your own songs in order to record, in order to perform, with a big audience. Yeah, those numbers, the ones who are mostly thinking of public speaking, usually don't hear those numbers, because I think yeah. Also nobody, unless someone is speaking for, let's say, more than 10 years, might reach that number. But most of us think much smaller number. And I think it's good that you bring that in, even though the analogy is not exactly the same, because a song might last only 4 or 5 minutes and a talk 20 minutes. So it's not realistically same magnitude. But yeah, that stresses how important it is to rehearsing, practicing, and honing your skills, doing over and over the same. Often it might sound boring, but yeah, you have to do it. The same applies.
Now you can understand why some bands we've probably all done this. You've gone to see a band that you love and they don't play the hit that you absolutely adore, the one that you would sing from the heavens, and they don't play it. And now that I've mentioned that just in my own band's scenario, imagine someone like the Rolling Stones that wouldn't play, you know, Superstitions or whatever. You might think, wow, why haven't they played it? Why wouldn't AC/DC play Highway to Hell? They probably performed it millions of times live and with, rehearsal as well. So you can understand why some artists want to play new content. Yes. It's almost like in my world, we're only showing the old features, you know. Yeah. We're never showing any of the newer ones. So yeah, it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, definitely. So going into you have been, as I say, you have been writing some very interesting blogs about those analogies between the rock band, your experience rock band, and mostly sales demos. So one that caught my attention was you mentioned the set list strategies. Just tell us what was that.
Yeah, so a little background on it is obviously trying to make my own brand on LinkedIn, which was strongly encouraged by Emburse to help us grow as a company and us as individuals. Again, another great thing that Danielle and our team pushed through the Emburse employee workforce. I'm always looking to be, how can I be different to someone out there, and what is my unique selling point? So I started to really think of the analogies of, you can't see in front of me here, but I have a disc here on the wall that has got a record and a CD in it that I created, and it's maybe 4.5 foot wide and fully autographed, and it's right in front of me, and it reminds me of some of the things that I've achieved musically. And it was staring me in the face that, Paul, your unique selling point is you did have, you know, a semi-successful music career. Is there synergies and analogies that you can use to compare it to pre-sales? And that's when the first thing I thought about was, when I go to a demo, I have, you might call it an agenda for the demo, or a demo flow, or a roadmap, basically a list of everything. It can start with introduction, then I'm going to show the software, then I'm going to let the sales guy talk about pricing, then we'll do a Q&A session with the customer. On the floor in front of me on stage is the songs that I'm going to play in that order. And it's not just six songs written down, Oscar. It's got the the same level of detail put into it that every sales organization or presenter, even someone who's going to do a TED talk or speaking at a, you know, a careers event at a school for a, you know, a children's PTA society, they all have to think about what order, what am I going to talk about first? What am I doing next? What's in the middle? How do I finish strongly? How do I keep people's attention in focus as well? So that's where, once I started diving into this, I thought, holy moly, these things are absolutely linked in with each other. So you would want to open your set in music with a really strong, powerful message. I want to do the same in a demo, because if I've got 15 minutes of the CFO's time, I want to make sure they leave that room thinking, yeah, I'm going to back what my team say. This guy was great. I'm going to make sure that I hit all of the points that they need to do. Same with the band that we just talked about. Play the hits that made you the most popular. Oh, I hope Mr. Jagger's listening to that one. And then, you know, it can change depending on the venue that we're playing. Sometimes we would do our own performance as a headline artist. Sometimes we played festivals. Sometimes we supported another band. So sometimes we were thinking, what songs can we play that are similar to that band so that we can win their audience as well? So there's a lot of science behind a set list. And of course, a product cycle. What's the latest thing we're promoting? So similar to us, and, you know, what are we promoting, whether it be a new strategy that you want to adopt into your company, whether it's a new product that you've released, or in my musical world, it was, what's the latest album that we're promoting? What was the single that's doing well? So the set list strategy dives into a lot of the areas, and you'll find what we've talked about previously, practice, prepare, etc., comes into it as well. I think that never leaves my pre-sales rock star, because it's one of the most important messages.
Mm. Yeah, excellent. I really like this analogy that you're doing. So comprehensive. And yeah, also when I being asked what are the main things for demos, to me is, I usually use the word structure, because you have to structure the sections. It has to be really well thought because of, yeah, what to put first, what to put in the middle, what used to close. So yeah, absolutely. It's very important what you are telling me about the set list strategy. Yeah, there's so many, for the ones who are listening, there are many more of these very interesting articles that Paul has written on LinkedIn. Paul, could you tell us now what is your favorite quotation?
Yeah, good one. I actually stick them on my monitor on post-it notes. I'm a huge fan of post-it notes. I have in front of me a box of multicolor, and wherever I hear things or want to remind myself of something. And I fell across this quote. I can't quite remember who it was, but I'm going to mention two people on LinkedIn. I'm sure it was either Maddie Supon or Natasha Bax. If you don't follow those ladies, please do. They are predominantly around pre-sales, but they are phenomenal. Great content from both of them. And one of them came up with the statement, sell the problem you solve, not the product you have, which I absolutely love. Mm. It sums up what my job is to go into a customer, talk to them, find out, you know, why they're waking up that morning and deciding that they need to make a change. So no one wakes up in the morning and says, I need to buy a piece of SaaS software. It just doesn't happen. It's like me thinking, I need to replace my lawnmower. Well, why? Is it because I've moved to a bigger house and I've got a bigger garden that I need from an electric to a petrol? There's always a reason going behind that as well. Maybe the current one's broken. So that sums up what I do. I'll also give you one of my favorite quotes from the music world as well. And it does fit into what we're talking about, is that remember when you're practicing and you're preparing and you're performing and you're trying to perfect your skill set, like I talked about my demo and getting that awful feedback from the sales rep, don't worry about it. Don't sweat about it, because you have to. That's part of honing your craft. Honing your craft is making mistakes. So when we were in the studio together recording records, somebody would make a mistake. If you were to look at my digital audio workstation and see how many takes it took for me to complete a 4-minute song, you would be horrified. It's the same as any artist that you've ever seen that will wonderfully let you see the bloopers reel, where they might be laughing during a line, etc., or someone breaks wind in the background, whatever it is that disrupts the flow. of that performance. And the saying that we would have in the studio to get the person who was in the midst of either recording a vocal or someone wanted to change something was, it ain't final until it's on vinyl, which I absolutely love. It is not final until it's on vinyl, because it's saying, don't panic. This is why we're here. You can then fix it or make a change. But once you've pressed it onto the record, that's it done. That's when it's absolutely final. So it's a really cool saying, and it let that person calm down and realize that, yeah, this is what I'm doing. I'm creating, I'm honing my craft, and I'm trying to make it as best as I can. So yeah, that's what I love.
Yeah, absolutely. Emphasize, you have to be doing. Some of them will be mistake. No doubt. And it's not. Need to carry on. I was supposed to ask you the book. Please remind me, what is the book you recommended, the one that you mentioned earlier?
Yep. So it's called The 6 Habits of Highly Effective Sales Engineers, and it's by a chap called Chris White. I'm actually going to be speaking on Chris's Tech Sales Advisors podcast shortly as well. Very, very good. I'll remind you of those sections. So it's partner. So it's about partnering with, in my industry, it's partnering with a salesperson. It could be someone, you know, an actor partnering with a really good director or coach, whatever. Probing every opportunity to, for me, it would be demoing. I've actually just written my recent article in the Pre-Sales Rockstar, which is called The Right Gig. In my early days, every single gig that would come into our management, we said, yes, let's do it. And then we found out very, very soon that going to the middle of a town outside of Brussels in Belgium wasn't always the greatest idea, because it didn't have a big audience, it didn't have a great sound system, it didn't have any other acts on. It was a festival we were asked to headline, and it cost us a lot. We lost a lot of money. It cost us too much money to get there. So that's what I mean by probing every request for you to either perform at an event or speak at an event. Is it the right type of audience that you want to get in front of? Will it boost my sales? Will it boost my profile, etc.? Prepare, as we talked about. Practice, as we talked about. So actually, and I want to stress this, do you actually stand in front of a mirror, or like you and I are using the beautiful technology of Zoom or Teams, record yourself, watch it back and say, okay, where can I sharpen that? Where can I get better? Perform, of course, is actually in the act of doing it. And again, perfecting that through either getting feedback from the audience, getting feedback from your colleagues that are there attending, getting feedback through yourself by, again, recording it, watching the recording back, and learning and perfecting it. So to get from where I am today as the director of the International Solutions team, took a lot of mistakes and a lot of really bad decisions. And now it's honed, in my opinion. It still can always get better. And through conversations with people like yourself and some of the outstanding bright minds that are in LinkedIn, everybody can learn. You know, another quote for you, it's every day is a school day, is what I love as well. You can always learn something new every day.
Mm-hmm. If you can leave us with a final exercise, something practical that you would recommend us to do it regularly, a routine to shine.
Yeah. One thing, it maybe is more my type of personality or the job that I'm doing, but when I'm getting introduced to an audience, particularly on Zoom, this works well on Zoom, and I would try and do it in person at a meeting. When we're going through the audience in the room, I actually write every individual's name in a position where they sit. And this is critical for me as well, because part of what we do as a software company is we don't want to just come in and do a cookie cutter presentation, the same thing every time. I want to personalize it to that business. But if I can then personalize what I'm talking about to a person in the room, it's even more powerful, and I usually win that person's favor or attention or admiration, whatever you want to call it. I'll give you an example. So if I write down Christine is the AP manager, and as we're going through talking about some of their problems, I know that our team spends 10 hours a week managing an inbox that's just, when am I getting my money? Where's my expense report? I need to know when I can pay my credit card. And imagine being able to write that down, look at a piece of paper, And I talked about post-it notes, Oscar, which I do all of the time. They're in front of me before every demo with the customer's name on it, what time the meeting's finishing, who's sitting where, or I use a notepad for that might be a little bit bigger. But I can then turn. So Christine, as the AP manager, you talked about your team spending 10 hours a week managing this inbox. Let me now show you through our expense report status button, your users themselves that are submitting the claims can check the status, and I'm going to be able to give your team 10 hours back every single day or every week, I think it was I said there. So there you go. That's a much more powerful message than saying, let me just show you my feature here. It resonates with that person individually, and that's something that I still do religiously to this day.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, definitely. Talking to the person made them feel everybody is important. Everybody who are you talking with is important. Oh, thank you very much, Paul, for this super interesting conversation. So let us know. First, let us know what is the name of your band, your last band you have. So we can find it somewhere. What's the name of the band?
Yeah, so the band is called Eden's Curse. So it's EDEN-SCURSE, Eden's Curse. You'll find us iTunes, Spotify, all of the kind of mainstreams. It was on YouTube, professionally recorded, live as well. Yep.
Okay, we'll find it there. And finally, tell us how people would be, if they want to be in touch with you to learn more about demos or anything else you do, what are the best ways to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can contact us through Emburse.com if you're interested in travel or expense or AP software. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, so you just find me under my own name. And I do have a dedicated page, The Pre-Sales Rockstar. You'll see a little devil horns hands icon, a little bit of Scottish tartan in there for my home country as well. So I'd love to encourage everybody to join that. That's a relatively new page, but I now have 4 articles live that you can read, and the plan is to expand that as we go throughout the next year or so.
Fantastic. Again, thanks a lot for this conversation, Paul, and all the best.
Thank you, Oscar.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed the show, do me a favor, go to Apple Podcasts or your favorite app and leave us a rate and review. This helps me so more people will find the show. And if you work in the tech industry, please visit my website, rockthetechstage.com. Until next time.